Welcome one, welcome all, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 82, coming at you right now, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can check out www.timemachineportal.com. You can find us on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Howdy, everybody. This is The Brant. I am your host. Hey, we're also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, and both myself and Kathy will be at Dice Tower Con this year in Orlando, so we are excited for that. Kathy is co-host on the podcast, who also is my wife. So we will be down there, as well as various other conventions. So if you're looking to do that this year, come and find us, and we'll play a game and hang out and whatnot. Alrighty. Hey, good to talk to everybody. Excited here for episode 82. I'm going to call this one, I'm going to call you Finn. We're talking to Steve Finn, board game designer and owner, publisher, Dr. Finn's Games. So that's where this title comes from. Of course, Finn, the famous character from the newest trilogy here since Disney took over the reins of Star Wars. So there's that. Awesome. Hey, we are really gearing up here. I guess some snow today in Connecticut. Craziness. But lots of things on the table. Lots of things happening. The key event, of course, that we're all waiting for is April 28th. And on April 28th, we're going to have International Tabletop Day. And yeah, so that'll be happening. So you definitely want to check that out. The store will be open all 24 hours, midnight to midnight. There'll be games. There'll be events. There's going to be special guests. We've got Eric Summers coming for a portion of time with his family. We've got Rob Davio's going to stop in, designer of Pandemic Legacies, Seafall, whole bunch of Hasbro games. Yeah, lots of things. And now works at Orones, Runs, Restoration Games and Restored games like Stop Thief and Fireball Island, which that Kickstarter will be in the middle of it. So I know he'll want to talk about that. And whatnot. So that should be fun. And then from Ant Lab Games, the YouTube channel, we've got Anthony and Francis coming up as well. They're coming to hang out at the store and play games with us all day. So that should be really fun. I'm excited for all those people to come and hang out. There may be more. Who knows? I've contacted other people. Those are the people that have wanted to come. I will be there too. You can come play a game with me. I know my plan is to play some of my longer, heavier games in the middle of the night. Dominant Species we're going to try out, probably a coin game, and there was something else we were talking about playing. Oh, Sidereal Confluence. We're going to try all those kind of in the overnight hours. So if those interest you and you want to be there overnight in the beginning, you know, the first 8 hours or so, that's what we'll be trying out there, and then move to some lighter fare and just getting around to play with people. Speaking of that, you're going to want to find me and play a game with me. I'm going to have something where I'm going to keep record of everybody who played a game with me, and we'll leave that at the store and whatnot. Just a fun thing. There's nothing special about playing a game with me, but that'll be good. So on that note, I'm going to have Get the MacGuffin. I actually have my copy already. It is a 5 to 10 minute card game from Looney Labs, and it's pretty fun, and it's what I think Flux should be from the start. So, it, you know, 5 to 10 minutes, everybody laughs, it's over. And whatnot, and it's a cool game. So you can play Get the MacGuffin with me. We'll have a bunch of copies there as well for sale, and then you can sign. I was going to have people sign the box, but the box, it won't work for people to sign the box. It doesn't open. I thought it would have an open spot there, but it doesn't. So I may wear a t-shirt. I may have a poster board. I don't know, something that people can sign, and we can just, hey, here's all the people I played with. I guess it's really for me to see the people I played with, but whatever. Should be fun. So definitely check that out. I don't think I have too much more to say, but as more details come in, I will let you know on that. But it should be a really good day. Other events, Silk City Board Gaming Group is April 14th this month. Definitely want to check that out. Noon to 12:30. Jen runs that at the Manchester Public Library, just down a scooch from where our store is. And definitely want to check out Jen as well on Board Game Breakfast if you haven't. She's on that, which is on the Dice Tower YouTube channel, if you haven't made your way over there. She's got an excerpt on there. So, yeah, you can check her out and see all that stuff. The games for April 14th, I know I saw a few, but they're escaping my brain at the moment. So, but she always does a great job. Usually has two copies of games. Teacher's there. It's very popular. She does a great job, and you can really dig in and play a lot of good, new, exciting stuff there. Hey, speaking of new, exciting stuff, I'm not going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about games that I've played again and go back. I do have some new plays, and I need to go over those, but I really want to wait till I have Brian on the episode and some time to dig in and talk about some of the games that we've played together there recently. So I'm just going to go back over some of the stuff that I've gotten to play again. So first, Codex Card Time Strategy. This is from Serlin Games. This is like a deck builder magic style game. It even has the Mage Wars system where you open a book and you have all the cards available to you. And you pick. I feel like the deck building part is really key. And what's awesome is I add cards to my deck every turn. There's no purchasing of them. I just add them. And I do that on your turn. So there really is no downtime. I'm thinking about what I want to add. The overwhelmingness of opening that book and having all these cards, I get that. For me, it's just fun to just pull cards and see what happens. So I get a little Tom Vassell in this for all my heavy gaming and strategy and playing all this stuff and learning all these things. This is one of those spots where I just let go. I'm just going to throw these cards in and see if they wreak havoc. So, you know, the more I play it, the better I'd get with that strategy, and so the shorter time I could think. So I played with a friend who's very much of that ilk. So it was just like we're just throwing cards in and seeing what happens and whatnot. But I really love this game. If you have any inclination of playing a good two-player battle game, and there are a lot of them, there certainly are, but this one's just unique with the deck building and the resource management. I think it's really well done. I think it's a really good game. So you should definitely check that out. There's a very small buy-in if you want to try it. I don't know if it's the best plan. There's like a one hero versus one hero. That's a little small to me. The three heroes are definitely better. But this could get you a cheap buy-in. That pack is like $20, and you could try it out and see if it interests you. So that's really neat. So then, lately, I have been playing. I played more Castell, still my number one game of 2018. I played more Terraforming Mars. Played a really great game with Kathy of Terraforming Mars. Was back and forth, back and forth. Then she got a big lead on me. We're doing final scoring. She's up by like, you know, 20-something points. I have 29 endgame points, and she has 4 and beats me by just enough. And I was like, wow, I love Terraforming Mars. That was so great. And she said, well, that's a game I'm not going to play often because it was a lot. It was a lot of thinking. And with two of us, I think it took 2.5 hours, which I really didn't expect. I remember Terraforming Mars being a little quicker with two, but no. So there was that. Later you'll hear from Dr. Steve Finn. He came to the store, so I played Cosmic Run Rapid Fire, Sunset Over Water, Little Flower Shop, all by him. I've played Herbaceous before. He had that at the store as well. You'll hear about those games coming up in terms of that. Played Race for the Galaxy, not Roll. Played a lot of Roll. Brian Harold's Roll on this podcast, that's one of his favorite games. He's played the thing like 110 times or something in his app. It's crazy. Not an app game, but tracked in BGG stats. That's where we track our plays. But I got to play Race for the Galaxy, and I really have to say I forgot how much fun managing the hand is. So Roll, just you're managing dice with faces, but Race, you're managing all these cards with all these powers and trying to figure out, boy, if I discard this one, I'm completely negating that path now. I could draw another card similar to it, but that was really exciting. So yeah, I actually had to go get Race. Somebody had suggested the one to play, and I had to go get Race out of my attic. And now it is out of my attic, so we'll just say that, so I can play it more. And then Kathy and I got kind of a rare middle-of-the-day date, and so we went out, we had some food, we did our budgeting for April, so we did all of our work, and then I set up Madeira, and we played Madeira again. And man, I love that game. That is my favorite What's Your Game. Just quick, Madeira is like a... Is it worker placement? No, it's like action selection game where you're harvesting goods from the Madeiran Islands, which are off the coast of Portugal. Definitely a heavy game. What's really... there's so many needs. It's a double worker placement. So this is what Raiders of the North Sea was pretty acclaimed for, that you put a worker down and do something and then pick a worker up and do that. And this one's very similar, except when you place a worker, you're doing something now, and then at the end of the round, you might be able to do it later if you can pay for it. If you can't pay for it, you can always take pirates, but pirates are super punishing. Whoever has the most pirates in the game loses 16 victory points. You're talking about scoring 80 to 100, so that's a good portion. And if you get over 20, you start losing a bunch as well. So it's just a great balance of trying to do all those things. I did miss a rule, and it was a major rule, but we still count the play because it was fair for both of us, and I really like this game. Someday I'm going to do a topic on this. I'm going to talk about, like, maybe I'll use that term from before, but like games that I herald. And so when I say that, like, I think of like games that are my like absolute, I love these games, but nobody else really does. So there's other games, you know, like Gaia Project that I love, or Gloomhaven that I love, or whatever some of these other games are through the ages, but lots of people love those games. But then those games that you love, but at least in my circle of people I play with, they're like, well, we'll play it with you if it's your birthday and it's the game you pick, or you choose it and we're playing, we'll play, but they're not as into it. And so then it's just this funny thing. I guess maybe it's part of that idea of being the facilitator, being the teacher. I very much want people to be happy, be enjoying, and I feel like if I pick the game, they're just playing it to make me happy, but I'd rather they have happiness. That makes me sound like such a great person. I don't know that I am in that sense, but that idea of just those games. So I'm going to kind of come up with a list of those games that are for me, and then people can respond with some of those for them. Maybe I'll have Kathy do the same. That'd be fun, or Brian on an episode there. So yeah, those are some games. And then just some of my Easter gaming. I did Baron Park. I played Near and Far with Brian. Played Codenames and Red 7. And what else did we play? Played Get the MacGuffin a bunch with people. And just some stuff like that, which was really cool because I was playing with family, both Kathy's side and my side. And it was just neat to get to play some games there. I do actually have some new plays, so yeah, I'm going to go over one of these and I'll save some others for another time. I'm just going to go over Castles of Burgundy, the dice game. So I got a chance to play this real light roll and write game. It really does feel like Castle of Burgundy. You've got the map of Castles of Burgundy. It's a Steffenfeld like dice rolling, action tile placing action selection kind of engine building game. Castle Burgundy is very famous. If you haven't played it, I highly suggest it. Get to our store, pick up a copy. It's pretty cheap. You know, it's in like the $35 range or so, maybe $30. It's pretty cheap, and it's just a great game. I think for Kathy and I, our most famous ones, we played Castle Burgundy at Maggie McFly's. Like, we just sat and played 90 minutes and said, bring us some drinks, bring us some food, bring us a little bit more dessert. Kick us out if you need to. They were good with it. People were coming over asking us what we're doing. Never seen people play a game this long. What are you doing? So that was exciting on that front. And yeah, so anyway, I should be talking about Castle Burgundy dice game. So in the dice game, it's one player rolls a bunch of dice, and there are two dice with colors and two dice with numbers, and you can match up a color with a number, and then there are spaces that have the same, and you can color in that box based on certain things. So I think like the purple spaces, you have to have a one or a two, and a purple, and then you can color that in. And when you fill in certain territory, you get points and you get bonuses. So bonuses, hey, you could take two turns. You could match another color with another number. You just can't match the same one twice. You could produce some goods. You could get a monk so that you can, I think, change a number to anything. And there's another one that changes a color to anything. So rather than just plus or minus one like it is in the regular game, it's just anything. A little more open. And you're just scratching off spaces and filling in the goods that you collect. There's a die that gets rolled that does like a one-time marker. And when it does a double-time marker, you get to trade in all your goods. So it's kind of a good and a bad. If you get those goods and they'll give you items, I think extra turns. But you lose a turn that you don't get to play. And you just kind of fill in your sheet. What was really cool was the game ended really close. It was like lowest was 45 points and highest was like 50-something points. So everybody was really close to each other. I think that's a little bit of an element of the game, just kind of at times it leads you down a path like, well, orange and six, so this is your only option is to do that, and we all do the same. So that's a little bit of an element. But it's a fun little light roller, but definitely everybody we're playing agreed, like, there's no way this could replace Castles of Burgundy. It's neat how they did it. It's neat that they made it. It's cool that you could play this, you know, going out to eat with another couple and roll the dice in the little box at the table, eat your appetizer, and knock it out before you get to your, you know, dinner or whatever, or waiting in line for a movie or something. I don't know, whatever it is. But I mean, I want the two-hour Castles of Burgundy experience. You know, I find nothing wrong with long games. Long games are fine as long as, you know, I'm either thinking or active somehow. So those are kind of the two things. I do feel like sometimes there's a shift towards, like, keeping me constantly taking my turn, that there's no downtime. Downtime isn't bad if I have a lot to think about. It's actually a negative if I don't have downtime and I have something to think about, because either I feel like I'm APing or I'm waiting for other people who are APing. So you want that sweet spot, kind of like I was describing in Codex earlier, of equal amounts of downtime and time to think. You know, like, oh, this is my turn, and I'm doing something on your turn. So there's that piece. But yeah, overall, it was a fun game. I'm not rushing out to get it, but again, it's like a $15 game, so that's cool. I think there's better rolling rights. Steve Finn is going to talk about one. Cosmic Run Rapid Fire. So I think, yeah, I'll just let that roll. I'm going to go to the interview I did with Steve Finn. He came to the store and demoed a bunch of games for people, sold a bunch of games there. So we've got a whole bunch of his games in, and just hung out and did a little segment for the podcast. And then after that, you will hear Kathy and Zephra and I describing our review of Stuffed Fables from Plaid Hat Games. So that will be after that. People have been asking me when Zephra's going to be on the podcast again, and it hasn't been something she's wanted to do. But in this instance, she talked a bunch. She had a lot to say, and that was really exciting. So I'm going to keep trying to get her. I'm not going to push her to do it. If she doesn't want to be on the podcast, she's not going to be on the podcast. But I know it's definitely something interesting and a little bit unique we have here on the Portal Gaming Podcast. So, yeah, I'm going to try to get her to do a couple other reviews. She's really getting... I mean, it's crazy going back 3 years ago when she would do it, or 2 years ago, and she was 5 or 6, and now she's 8. She's really a lot more articulate about what she's doing and whatnot. So I've really been proud of her. And like Century Spice Road, she's really good at that game. So it's just neat to see her brain connect and click and all those things. But anyway, on with the show! All right, howdy everybody, this is the Brent, and I'm sitting here with Dr. Steve Finn from Dr. Finn's Games. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks for having me.
And we had a little, we had a little soiree here. You came on up from New York State and brought a bunch of your games and were teaching people, and I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah, it was good to be here, good to see some, I've seen some of the faces from other conventions, but it was good to show my games to some new people.
Yeah, you were just at Con recently.
Was that Con Con? Yep.
Awesome. Nice. So, what are some of the newer games that you were showing off tonight playing with people?
Tonight I showed off a couple of the games by Pencil First Games that I have a working relationship with. So people might know Herbaceous, mm-hmm. and Sunset of Water just came out. So I do publish some of my own games, and I also publish through other people. And so I've started a good relationship with Pencil First Games. With Ed Baraff and Beth Sobel, who does the art.
Awesome. Yeah, so people were taken to those. So you're kind of, I think the Rotto claim for you is like the king of the filler, right?
That's what people say. You know, but I've been having conversations with people recently about whether that's a good thing to say.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people like talking about the negative connotations of filler.
Sure.
Because what I pride myself on is that my games are short, but they're not just empty. And so sometimes people might hear filler and think like, oh, it's just going to be a little quick trifle
right.
of a game, and I'm just going to whip it off, and then we'll move on to something with meat.
Yeah.
But really, I like to think my games are like 15 minutes of meat.
Yes. You know? Yeah, no, I definitely
see that. You know, it's just not filler.
Right.
But I'll proudly wear that title with that caveat.
Nice.
Yeah.
So a couple that were out here. So Sunset Over Water. I think that's one that's at Kickstarter fulfillment now.
It is in Kickstarter fulfillment.
And coming out somewhat soon to retail?
I think so. I'm not in charge of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Ed's going to have those all shipped out probably within the week. And then I don't know the timing for release.
All right.
After that. I would assume within a month.
So just give us a quick rundown, the 1 minute run through of Sunset Over Water.
Sunset Over Water is a, essentially it's a set collection game where people are artists moving through the landscape. And when I was originally working with Ed about that, you know, we decided what kind of game can we make that can really highlight Beth Sobel's art, because her artwork is just stunning. So she said something about wanting to possibly do a game about landscapes. So I said, all right, I'll figure out a game with landscapes. And so the idea is you are an artist, you are painting landscapes, and then you're turning them in essentially for commissions to earn renown. And so you're trying to collect, well, really, it's you're trying to paint various features to match up with what people want. So you're collecting sets, turning them in. There's a little bit of a racing element because everybody has planning cards that has a time of day on it. And so you're establishing initiative and turn order based upon what card you play. So the people who wake up earlier can get out to the wilderness earlier, can paint quicker. And so you can sometimes, there's an interaction on the board because you might be planning something and you're saying, oh, I think I'm going to wake up at 6 this morning. And I'm going to go in and paint this. But oh no, someone woke up at 5:30 and they got in my way. But like all of my games, it's easy to learn, but there's more things going on than might first appear.
Yeah, I thought the way that you had, like, each player has an individual deck, and you used, like, the quarter hour, 7:15, 7:30.
Yes.
So there's no ties.
So there's
you don't
never
have to worry
any
about
ties.
Any ties about when you got
Yeah, so it took a little planning to figure out what would be a good, balance. But so, like, the person who had the earliest card of the day, which is 5 a.m., their 6 o'clock card was really bad because it was, like, 6:45.
Yeah.
You know, so it might be 5 o'clock and then 6:45 and then all the way at, like, 7:45. So, but
yeah.
then the second player would have a different set of values.
Yeah, no, that was really neat.
Yeah.
And then your newest one here is the Little Flower Shop.
Little Flower Shop just came out. I fulfilled that. That's a another. It's kind of a set collection. Possibly, it's kind of more like matching. It's a sushi go in a flower shop is kind of the way I've been describing it. So it has the familiar card drafting mechanic of take one and pass. But the interesting part is you are decorating a flower shop window. So there's various types of vases, and you're trying to get the cards, the flower cards that match. But then you can also collect money so that you can buy hanging baskets and hang those in the window. So unlike, say, Sushi Go, where at the end you just have kind of a display of cards that are, you know, whatever you happen to get. This one you could look at, there's a visually pleasing window at the end that if you filled it to the max, it, you know, looks really nice and it's like gives you a sense of accomplishment.
Yeah, I really enjoyed being able to like you said, once you draft the cards, then you can kind of move them around. You can shuffle things. Oh, I'll shuffle this here and I could sell this off. So it gave you more to think about than just what am I drafting.
Right. I don't like having too many restrictive rules. So I like the idea of that, you know, it's your flower shop window. You can change things around as you see fit.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like once you put the flower in, why would you have to keep it in the vase? If you want to move it to a new vase, you can.
Cool. And then you're playing Herbaceous with people. I think a lot of people know about that one. That was the first one you did with Pencil First Games.
Yes.
And that, again, that beautiful art from Beth Sobel.
Right. That's a big seller.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's great. And then I got a chance to play Cosmic Run Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire. That's the second in a Cosmic Run series, which will soon have 3 games. I'm about to launch Cosmic Run Regeneration, which is going to be like a full board game. The one you played is a roll and write. It's a 1-2 player roll and write. It does have a solo mode. And it's dice drafting. You roll dice and you pick dice, which either allows you to move your ship along these planet tracks or gain technologies that allow you to do such things as attack other players or defend attacks or move in special kind of ways.
Yeah, that was fun. I really enjoyed that.
Good.
Too. That was cool. So, nice. Well, my favorite, I know my wife's favorite, she loves COG.
Oh, really?
She's really into that, and a friend of ours, they really enjoy that, and the spelling the words, and that's just a really unique worker placement where I can go first somewhere else, but I may end up dead last elsewhere.
Right, well, that's the black sheep of my, it's kind of the black sheep of my games. it's the heaviest game I have.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a real brain burner if you want it to be. And it's kind of longer, so that one's definitely not King of the Filler.
Yeah, no.
But
no,
I'm happy with it. I liked branching out into a new thing. And I don't know if there's any worker placement word games out there. I know I know there's the card drafting paperback.
Right.
You know, took the Dominion. Right, deck builder. That's the word I'm looking for. You know, that took deck building and made it into a word game. So I made a worker placement word game.
Cool.
So that was kind of fun to design.
Well, I feel like if I'm talking to Steve Finn, I can't not talk about Biblios.
Oh, yeah.
I know has been your biggest hit, and I just think it's great. So I gave you the story about how I backpacked around Block Island with Biblios in my backpack, along with water and food and all that kind of stuff, and got to play there. But you had an even better story about Biblios, so I think that's a great way to finish.
Right, let's finish with that. Well, I was at a convention, and someone came up and said, Biblios saved my life. I was like, what? How did Biblios save your life? And he proceeded to tell me a story that he had in his backpack. And I can't remember if he was hiking or like on a bike trip, to be honest. But he was traveling and he had a glass, a beer glass and a pint glass in his backpack. And apparently he fell backwards and the glass shattered and it pierced right through the Biblios game. But if the Biblios game wasn't there, it would have probably gone into his back.
Right.
So he thinks that it saved his life.
That's amazing.
So I'm happy. I'm happy to be able to have contributed to someone's life.
It also
keeps them alive.
It also was a great game.
And he had fun. I don't know if it pierced through his cards, but hopefully you got another version.
There you go. Yeah, nice.
Another copy.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Steve. Thanks for taking time to come out to the portal and for spending some time with us on the podcast.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, and it was a pleasure. And
right.
Someday I'll come back.
Hey, everybody. This is the Brant. In fact, it's all of the Sandersons. We are on the road. Say hi, friends.
Hi.
All right. So it's me and Kathy and in the back. So we figured we are driving to Easter. Happy Easter, everybody. And we thought it would be fun to do our family review of Stuffed Fables from Plaid Hat Games. So we've now gotten a chance to play, I think, two or three stories, but definitely enough that I feel like we're pretty comfortable reviewing the game. And so we're going to take you through that. So, Kathy, do you have any initial thoughts about Stuffed Fables? Just overarching ideas.
I think it's cute. I think being players of Gloomhaven and other dungeon crawls like that, it was fun to have one that appealed to Zephra as well, and that we can do with her. I feel like it's definitely interesting enough to keep her attention for the time it takes to play it, for the most part. I think it's fun.
All right, Zephyr, how did you feel about Stuffed Fables?
I liked it.
Anything else you want to say or no?
I think the stuffed animals are cute.
All right, so let's do a rundown here. So Stuffed Fables is designed by Jerry Hawthorne, who also famously made Mice and Mystics and Tail Feathers for Plaid Hat Games. He designed both of those. And so it's a story-driven game. Definitely some differences from Mice and Mystics, however. Actually, really key differences. First off, it's not a campaign game. It's a one-off, so you can change who your Stuffy is each time. Stuffies are your characters, and I believe there's six, right? There's a bear, an elephant,
A rabbit,
and there's a pig and a lion, and what's Stitch or whatever his name is?
A, what is mum- a mummy, you said?
Yeah, he's something like that. What is he? I can't remember.
I think he's just like an old rag doll kind of.
There you go. So you've got those six to choose from. And the way the game works is on your turn, you draw five dice out of a bag, and they're various D6s of different types of colors. Sorry, they're all D6s, various types of colors. And you roll those dice. The white ones will give you more stuffing, which is your health. The black dice are bad. If you draw one, you set them aside. Once you have a black dice equal to the number of players, then the enemies will go, which is a really cool element that the enemies don't go every turn, so you have some planning time to worry about them. It also, I feel like, allows the enemies to be powerful, but you have time to deal with them. And then you have various other dice that are used. You can use any die for movement, and then based on who you are, if you're ranged or melee, there's different color dice for those kind of things. And you read through the map. Very story-driven. You read a story to begin, a pretty long one. You read, like, excerpts in between. So it almost has like a near and far kind of feel where you read these stories throughout. Pretty engaging story, very well written in terms of that. And the goals vary in what you're trying to do. There's a lot of different things that you're trying to do. Each page will kind of have its own mechanisms to it. So it's not the same thing. It's definitely dungeon crawl-esque, but it's definitely aimed at a lighter, younger crowd. Would you say that's about the rundown of the game, Kat?
Yeah, pretty much.
Anything you want to add?
It was fun that we don't have all of the characters available to us yet. So in our last game we played, we just unlocked one of the new characters.
Oh, right.
The lion, Steffi. So far I've liked the different scenarios. They're very, child appropriate, but still, interesting. They have a whole world set up that seems, it's good.
What do you feel about the story, Zeph? Do you want to talk about that?
I like the stories, and I just feel like that there should be a little less story, but I really like them.
Nice. Cool. So let's talk about components. So the components of the game. So there are miniatures for all of the everything. For all of the characters,
yep.
And for all of the enemies and the bosses. So everything has a miniature that comes out. They use some generic. I think there's three different generic, like, minions with four of each for that. There's the colored dice. There's the book, which is, like, spiral-bound with maps, and everything's kind of in there. And then there's just some decks of cards. That's pretty much it. There's a bag to put the dice in. But I feel like the components are excellent. They are one of the shining parts of this game. That spiral-bound book is amazing.
Yeah.
It's beautiful images. It's a little tough to get started. I guess I would be going into rules. But I know another family that we recommend this to, and they just had trouble, like, just reading page one and getting into it. It's longer and it's more complex than I think people would anticipate, even though it's definitely a light game, right? That barrier is a little bit there. But, yeah, the dice are good. They made them colorblind friendly, so the red dice are orange, and the pink, purple dice are pink or something like that. That's not a mistake or whatever. Card quality's good, lots of tokens. And the minis are fun. You definitely want to have minis in a game like this, I feel like. And since there's not a ton, whereas like Gloomhaven has so many, it makes sense to do all that. The sculpting's done, so... What else do we feel about components? What does anybody else think?
Pretty much summed it up.
Cool. I'm doing a majority of the talking here, but that's fine. So then gameplay. So what did you feel about the gameplay? How did it engage you? What was good? What was slow? What was fun? All those kind of things, Kath.
Well, it's co-op, so we all would discuss our plan for the room. I feel like that was good to do with Zephra, and helpful for that. Play moves pretty quickly. You get a certain number of dice per round that you use, and then you're done.
Cool, yeah. Well, I think one of the key elements is you can share your dice with the other players.
Oh, that's great, too.
So that was really interesting. So people are engaged on other people's turns, but you still feel like your turn is your turn, right? So some co-ops where it's like, well, your turn is everybody's turn, I still feel like you get to make decisions. It was never like, oh, you must do this. There's a couple of those, like, well, to win, we need you to go here. But it was kind of like, oh, if you go there, I'll go over here to complete the various things. So I thought that was fun. I really like how the enemies only act after you get a certain number of black dice out of the bag. I thought that was really, innovative in a way, but it kept the game moving. And you weren't constantly under threat of enemies. It was just like, oh, if we draw another one, we need to think about that. So that was good. And just a few other elements, a few of them would bog it down. I would say overall the game is too long. That's its biggest negative, is, you know, a story encompasses something like 5 to 7 pages. You usually play less because at times in the arc it's almost like choose your own adventure. You can go one way or the other. But even if you end up playing about 5 pages, they tend to be 10 to 15 minutes a page. And so you run over an hour for a scenario. And for a family-style, kid-style game where you're reading a lot, I felt like it would just get too long. Now, we were able to leave it set up and play, you know, over various days. But sometimes it would feel a little bit long.
Zephyr has something she wanted to add.
And I think it's kind of cool that you can't really die. You're mates just have to give you stuffing.
Yeah, that's another element. If you lose all of your stuffing, you just fall over and other people come over and give you stuffing. And then you stand back up. Steph, what did you feel about the length of the game? Like, we had to play it over multiple days or nights. Did you like that or not like that?
I think it could be a little shorter, but yeah, it was really fun.
Yeah, what did you feel about the length, Kath?
I agree that it could have been a little shorter because we definitely lose a little bit of attention span by the end of it. It takes a little bit of encouraging to have her keep on till the end. But but it's definitely not a reason to not play the game.
Awesome. So one of the things I know a lot of people ask is, like, what if I don't have kids or what if I don't play with kids? Could I still play this game? And I definitely think so. I think it's a light game, like I said, but I think there's more there than people might imagine or expect. The system is, you got to wrap your head around it. Once you do, then it's kind of on repeat. But then every scenario changes up some rules, changes up things. There's different bosses and things. It's not an overly hard game. I didn't really feel like it was super difficult, and you really can't die. But if you're definitely into the story, what I heard somebody say is, well, if you're a group of adults and you would watch a Pixar movie together, then you would enjoy this game.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It reminds me a lot of Toy Story.
Yeah.
Especially even the enemy characters are like put together pieces from old toys and stuff. It reminds me a lot of that.
Cool, yeah. And I think the only thing, other thing that I would want to say is just a quick comparison to Mice and Mystics. So I definitely like this game better than Mice and Mystics. I always love the idea of a campaign game, but sometimes it's nice to just know, hey, we played one, and we don't have to save everything and set it aside and figure it out next time. It just kind of tells you again how to set up, and you can pick new characters. I think you both were locked into your characters, but I was switching characters out to play different ones each time. The system is simpler. I like it better. There's not as much to track, which is good. So in this case, for this style of game, I like the streamlining better. I like the story throughout the game as opposed to at the beginning and the end where you read story in Mice and Mystics. There's just a lot of other things to track. So overall, final thoughts / rating on the game, however you want to do that. We don't have an official system. Zeph, you want to rate the game first?
I think I really, really like the game. We haven't played it in a long time, but I really like it. The only thing I think it could change is the length of time, how everything is.
I think it's a great game. Perfect for a family. Not a huge, long setup time either. So it's nice. We can just pull it out quickly if we decide to play. Yeah, I definitely recommend it.
Awesome. Yeah, same with me. I think it's a really great game. I think kids are not. I think it's totally worth playing. Again, probably that caveat of would you enjoy a Pixar movie without kids to decide, you know, if it's really going to be the theme for you. And Zephyr hit the nail on the head. The only negative in this whole game to me is the length of the missions. They just are a little bit longer. But I think if you know that going in and you have a spot where you could leave this set up and just play over 2 days, play an afternoon and the following afternoon or an evening and the following afternoon or whatever, you'll be done. It's not that long. It's not, you know, horribly long. But other than that, I think the game is great. I think it's super enjoyable. I love the characters, the story. So for me, if I rate it out of 10, it'd be a 9 out of 10. And that's Stuffed Fables from Jerry Hawthorne and Plaid Hat Games. Thank you, Sanderson. Say bye, friends.
Bye.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Well, there you go, everybody. That is episode 82. I think I'll call you Finn. And that one's in the books. Thanks so much. Hope you enjoyed the segments we had today. Hope to see you at the Silk City Board Game Group. Hope to see you at the 24-hour tabletop event. If you need any info or anything, feel free to call the store. If you're, you know, outside the area looking for a hotel to stay at or a good place to eat, a Cosmic Omelet is clutch, and that's a great place in town. So anyway, we move on from there. Maybe I'll see you at Dice Tower Con if you're doing that full trip this year. So until next time, I'm your host, The Brant, and I hope you step into the portal. Portal Game Podcast, a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on March 29th, March 31st, and April 2nd, 2018. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Game Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. You bet your bippy.